Hello and welcome to ABW Radio Live. Hello, welcome, I should say. Sorry for the delay. The two fine gentlemen that I have with me this afternoon had to get some refreshments. Non-alcoholic refreshments, I might add. Very strictly sober on today's podcast. My name is Chris, I'm your host, and I've got with me today John and Drew. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And a good afternoon it is. What a change a week makes, hey? One swallow doth not make a summer, but let's enjoy the happiness while it's here. Arsenal 2, Manchester United 0. This is ABW Radio Show 137. Where does the time go? Let's get some initial thoughts then. Drew, what did you make of it overall?
I thought it was greatly improved. If you balance between this performance and the performance against Spurs, it wasn't perfect, especially I think earlier on you could see that maybe we were going to get kind of the part down our right hand side again, but for whatever reason, United sort of strayed away from hitting us there, and I think that was where they sort of lost the match from there on out. I thought if you look at Ramsey's performance, Xhaka's performance, both of them were very good today. I think Welbeck to the middle was a drastic improvement over Olivier Giroud that we saw at White Hart Lane. I don't think Ozil was all that great again. Maybe he worked a little bit hard, but I think we could still expect more from him. I thought Holding again came in and had a good performance, and I think it's justified now that I think for the rest of the season you'd have to play him if we're going to go with three at the back. Again, simple on the whole, we were much better. But as you say, it's what we do from here on out. That matters most. If we take this result and then go and muck it up against Saints away or Stoke away the weekend after that, it doesn't matter. So it's about, I think, building confidence in three at the back if we're going to continue to use it for the rest of the season. And I just think now it's just about getting points now. You and I spoke before we started recording that some of the teams above might have some tricky fixtures, of course. So again, it's just about points. I think if we win the match in hand, and I think if we can get maybe 7 points out of our next 9 possible, then I think we're actually in pretty good shape, potentially to maybe squeak top four despite the odds we were given us maybe a couple weeks ago. So again, an improvement, but it's what goes on from here on out that matters to me.
Absolutely. We'll come on to the top four later on because I still believe, nobody will listen to me, but I still believe. John, as we said at the start of the show, no, it doesn't change the whole season. It doesn't mean suddenly we're going to win the every competition we're in. We're still in a very poor position overall, and it's still been a tough season. But it's one of the highlights today, isn't it? It's always nice to put one over that Portuguese twat.
Yeah, it's one of the few highlights of the season. Like, this honestly will probably keep me going to the cup final now, because he looked pretty miserable at the end of it, and the kind of the desperation you saw of chucking on what's the little
Jesse Fygaard.
speedy kid called? Not him, no, the one who's actually good at football. Rashford.
Oh,
Yeah,
Marcus,
that one.
The new next
Yeah,
world
yeah.
superstar, Rashford, yeah.
And putting him on, when they've got the Europa League semi next week, I don't think he ever wanted to play him today, and that was kind of desperation. So yeah, that was nice to see. I thought the team, first half was kind of 50-50, both teams. Second half, we looked really comfortable. We got a bit of luck, obviously, with the first goal, and then we just took advantage of it, seized on it, actually put some pressure on the team for once, when they were a little bit wobbly for the 5-10 minutes after you concede. Got the second. And my favorite bit of the game was the 5-10 minutes after we got the second goal, where we didn't do anything stupid. We didn't push forward, just kept possession at the back and just made Man United just chase the ball around. Just did nothing stupid, just really sensible. And it was nice to see the players actually have a bit of common sense, just go, just keep the ball 5-10 minutes, this is fine. And then we'll reassess our shape. And if we need to go forwards again, we can. And if not, we can just leave it like this. So, yeah, much better performance. I was questioning a little bit the lineup at the start. Mainly Gibbs, because I didn't think he had a great game left wing back, but I suppose there wasn't too many options, because if you move Monreal out of that back three, then you have to put Gabriel back in, who hasn't had a didn't have a great game previously. So yeah, I think everything was about as good as it can get. Disappointing performances from one or two players, but overall I thought the team played really well, and a few players in particular, I thought Inox and Ramsey were really, really good today. which is nice, especially Ramsey, because I'm a big fan of his and he gets a lot of stick and has done this season fairly, you know, because he hasn't performed great. But I thought you saw a lot more of what you can do today.
Yeah, well said, and we will come on to individuals in a tick for sure. Drew, lineup wise, you mentioned sort of kicking off at the start there that we saw Rob Holding come back into the side today, and we also saw the return of Danny Welbeck up front. Welbeck in particular had sort of a quiet first half, but grew into the game, I thought, second. And Rob Holding, for me, you know, is already within 6 to 8 months a better defender than Gabriel has been for 18 months. And it's just personal opinion, but I think Holding is a player that we've got to stick with now, haven't we? And that lineup today was, I thought it was decent. It was a good balance. Your thoughts on that overall when it was announced?
I think there's no reason to stray away from Holding now. I think one of the bigger issues, I think, at some bigger clubs in England is that either they try to force too much on a young player or they don't give the young player enough time. And I think now that he seemed to grow in confidence, I think he performed well against United. He played well against City. I think we missed him against Spurs. So, you know, if he's done well against two of our biggest rivals, at least rivals in terms of European places, I think you have to stick with him. I think that's how a player's confidence will go from strength to strength if they keep putting performances like this. And there's just no reason to drop him at this point. I think he's shown that he can handle it, so he should stay. Particularly in the fact that, you know, you have, throughout the match, Ox was rampaging forward, as you want to see from him. But because of that, and also Ramsey as well got forward as much as he could, there was a large amount of space left in behind on our right-hand flank. But if you look at where Holding, the vast majority of Holding's time in the pitch was spent actually covering behind Ox, and it shows that he's responsible defensively enough to notice when there is a weakness that's potentially there and he wants to try to cover it. And I like that as a player. I think we struggled with Gabriel there in that regard because I don't think he did enough of it. So I think he should play. I think we should stick with Welbeck up top as well, because if you're going to go with three up front, especially with Sanchez and Ozil just, you know, reserved right off the striker, using Giroud doesn't make any sense. You know, Ozil's the type of player to make runs off a center forward. You know, Sanchez likes to come deep and get the ball. So if Sanchez is going to be more mobile, then you need a mobile striker to go into the holes left by Sanchez's movement. I think that's why Welbeck makes more sense at the center forward channel. I think it showed. Eventually, he grew into the game. He made better runs. He's always going to work, or he can press the back line at pace. He is strong on the ball. He's good in the air, as we saw. So I think he's the right balanced center forward option if we're going to continue with what we're doing. I think in the end, it paid dividends. It's just, I think we made better tactical calls from the outset. You know, even if you want to question Gibbs, and I question Gibbs as well, but I don't think he was necessarily poor today. I think on the whole, this is, I think, back to front. I think this is just a much better showing. And certain players that had to stand out did stand out if we were going to get the result. And I think that's what I'm particularly happy about most of all.
Yeah, some good points there, mate. And we'll definitely talk about those fullback positions in a tick as well. I just want to give a rarely do this, but lovely to see young Sophie in the chat box there. If you don't know of who Sophie is, she came on a podcast a little while ago at Soccer Diva on Twitter. Very, 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 very good is our Soph. So give her a little bit of love. So nice to see you in the chat there, Sophie. Sadly, Danny's in the chat as well, but we can't have it all, can we? John, let's sort of go through the first half as a whole then. To be honest, we can probably sum it up in, I suppose, a space of 10 minutes, really. There wasn't a lot of action throughout the first half, but we had the best of the chances. Obviously, the Ramsey shot that De Gea saved, there was the scramble where I think the ball was just about kept in by Ozil firing it across after Ramsey didn't make contact at the back post. But it was a largely sort of tepid affair first half. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I thought, you know, United had some good chances as well. The Ramsey one was nice, those runs being picked up for once and people actually finding him. I know Alexis was a bit frustrating today because of the, you know, the fact he wasn't necessarily staying out wide so much. But when he was dropping into the middle and picking those passes out, I thought he was really good. The worry, like Drew said, with Oxlade-Chamberlain and Ramsey both being on that side and pushing so high up, Holding was a little bit exposed early on. And you saw Mkhitaryan getting into space, Rooney as well, picking out some pockets of space. And Martial had a couple of half chances. But I don't know, there was sort of 5 minutes for each team. And then after that, it just kind of flattened out. And neither side really wanted to go for it too much. I thought both midfields were a little bit disappointing. for both sides in the middle that they couldn't really seem to keep the ball. It was a lot more was the pressure coming down from wide and some more sort of direct balls, because we were playing quite a high line, which against Martial I thought was particularly dangerous, because when you've got Herrera, Carrick, you know, Rooney, I know he's nowhere near the player he used to be, but they've all got a really good ability on the ball to pick out a pass. So that was okay. I thought Welbeck was a little bit slow to pick up the runs he could have made in the first half. His movement wasn't quite there. It got a lot better in the second, certainly. But yeah, it was a bit, it was kind of like two teams not quite sure how they're supposed to approach the match and whether they're supposed to go for it too much, because you could see neither team really wanted to lose it. It was kind of like that Man City game we had a while ago, where sort of by the 70th, 80th minute, both teams just sort of went, yeah, we'll take a draw because I really don't want to lose this game. And it seemed like that in the first half to me.
Yeah, I completely agree. It was always like a bit of sparring. It was somebody did it, I think it was Paddy Power, I think, said that Man United Arsenal games used to be like this, and they had the 300 film sort of montage, and then they said it's now like this.
Yeah.
The scene from the In-Betweeners movie where he's got him in a headlock and he's just sort of rolling around the floor.
It was like the first few rounds of like a boxing match where they're just kind of feeling each other out. Mm. There was a few sort of good shots in, but you know, Cech made a good save from Martial. I think Koscielny just got his toe onto the ball just as Martial took the shot, yeah, which probably actually did quite a lot for it. And De Gea made that good save from Ramsey's shot as well. But other than that, there wasn't a ton in it. There's a one at the back stick where Ramsey just couldn't get onto it and Ozil fired it back across. But I didn't think either team tested it too much. The worry I did have as an Arsenal fan was that space that they were exploiting in behind Oxlade-Chamberlain. But second half, we definitely seemed to tighten up that side. And United just seemed to drop off a lot more and sort of almost go to kind of like a back six.
Yeah, it was a sort of a bit of a strange, wasn't it, how they approached the game? Because I did think they, I don't know, I should I have expected more? It's Man United as under Mourinho. I probably shouldn't have done, really. But nevertheless, Drew, not a lot else to talk about first half, really. I mean, we'll touch on individuals in the minute. But second half came out for the first, 10 minutes again. It was probably worse, to be honest. It was like just two teams that you know, just didn't want to attack. And then Granit Xhaka bought a ticket to the lottery and his numbers came in. Huge deflection off the back of Ander Herrera, who I must confess I'm a big fan of, even though he's quite a simple player. He's a very, very good player at what he does. He turned his back. It's the second schoolboy error that you teach kids as a youngster. Play to the whistle was the first one. Never turn your back to the other one. And the ball loops up over De Gea and into net from 30-odd yards. Seen a lot of that, didn't we, when he was at Gladbach? He's renowned for his shooting. Just goes to show sometimes you've got to take a gamble, doesn't it?
I think the announcers mentioned that he seemed a little reluctant to shoot. I would disagree with that. I think he recognized he had space. I think he took an extra test to get the space to maybe minimize the distance just a little bit more before shooting. And I think that from when you have a player that has left foot that he has, and as good as he can shoot from distance, I think that it's good to see that he would maybe bypass what you would expect him to do in the current system we have, which is maybe keep possession or look for a ball into the box. And I think he took a shot, and it's so early from him this season, he has the ability to hit the target from that distance. So I'm just happy that he sort of took the chance. There's nothing much more to say from it, but I think on the whole, in regards to Xhaka, this is the type of performance that I wanted to see from him. I think we've talked about it. I mean, I wrote about it in midweek, and we talked about it after the Spurs result, that if you're going to play a system like this, you have to be a little bit more direct and sometimes to bypass the midfield. And I think when you saw from him today, he is so good at picking out those long balls, you know, those 30, 40, sometimes even 50-yard balls that are just like perfectly into the run of the player. If you see a bit more from this from him, then you're going to get – he's going to build his confidence as well. He's going to be more comfortable in the role he's playing. And I think as you saw his confidence build over the match, I think that's why he took the shot, because I think he was said, instead of just going with the party line, if you will, he was confident in his abilities again, and that's why I think he took the shot. Because when he came to us early on in the season, he was confident, and you saw him taking those shots. You saw him making the types of passes you saw from him today. And I think if he sticks to what he's good at, and we allow him or afford him the ability to really highlight the things that he is great at, then you're just going to see better performances from him. And I think this is the kind of what you want to see from him week in, week out, just, you know, depending on a few minor things. But this is the player that Arsenal fans wanted. You could argue we still need another type of midfield player that we were still lacking. But I think this is it was much better from him today for sure.
Yeah, I don't like giving Joey Redknapp any credit about anything, to be honest. But I thought he was right when he said that the biggest thing Xhaka seems to have found this season is mobility. He seems to be struggling to get through games at a high pace level. And I find that weird because you'd know better than I do. I don't think Gladbach's pitch is particularly small. It's quite a large pitch, isn't it? So it seems strange. Maybe it is just the pace, but then Bundesliga isn't slow. So it's a bit of a weird one. He just seems to be a little bit... When he goes backwards, I expect him to make that beeping noise that Lloris make when they reverse. But yeah, no, nevertheless, he got the opener and all credit to him. And then, John, I'm coming to you for this one because I think you'll share this with me. Mm. It was a proper, what I call a proper goal, like a proper cross bullet header. They compared it to the Henry header against United when Eboué, remember him, put the cross in all those years ago. And it was very reminiscent of that. Oxlade-Chamberlain, terrific delivery. Have to highlight the role that Rob Holding played in that goal as well, winning the ball back after United tried to break out. He put in a solid challenge, fed Oxlade-Chamberlain, in come the cross, and Welbeck with a bullet header. Proper centre-forwards goal, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really, really nice. I thought Ox was superb today. Every time he got a chance, he was running at Mkhitaryan and Darmian and trying to get the ball in early as he could. Welbeck a few times had been a little bit late onto the runs and hadn't read the ball that was coming in correctly, but just found a bit of space. And I think it's probably the only time in the game really where Smalling hadn't picked him up, and he just got that yard of space off of him. And I think Ramsey as well was coming into the box. Phil Jones is out of position. Smalling's then looking at Ramsey. He's got Welbeck behind him, not quite sure where to put it up. Ox whips in a brilliant ball, really, really good. Just so much pace on it that all you got to do is just get the contact. But he absolutely nailed it, and De Gea had no chance. He's a really, really good goalkeeper because that save he made, I can't remember who it was who had the shot, but it deflected off the Ander Herrera's foot. That might have been Ramsey, actually, where he got his hand to that. It was brilliant. So, yeah, really, really good. Really pleased for Welbeck as well, because he's such a frustrating player because physically he's got all the attributes you want, especially as a striker now. You know, he's got the pace, he's strong, he's good in the air, he can run all day, all hassle. But his finishing at times and his reading of the game isn't quite there. And for someone with his ability or some of the things you do see him do, he doesn't score enough goals. So he's had a really tough couple of seasons since he's come to Arsenal with all those injuries. So just building that confidence up. And he seems to love scoring against United. You know, he really, really celebrated that, which is nice. You don't often see that, players from ex-teams actually celebrating the goal, but he had no worries celebrating that. He was very happy with it. So I was really pleased with that. And the fact that we got the bit of luck with the first goal from Xhaka with the deflection, but we went at them again because we could see they were rattled. And we actually took advantage of that, which is something we haven't done in games. You think back to Everton and Man City where we'd gone a goal up and then sat back and just let them come on to us and then ended up losing the game. We didn't do that today. We went and applied the pressure, got the second goal, and they went, right, now we can reassess sort of the match. So they seem to be, from the sideline, Arsenal was a lot more vocal today, I actually noticed, which is something you don't normally see. I could hear him shouting instructions and telling players to play inside. Lanzini! Yeah, sorry, Jace has just put in what?
Lanzini!
you know, you could hear him being more vocal. You could see the players were a lot more aggressive with the way they were talking to each other on the pitch today. Sanchez was really frustrating today, and it was a couple of times we berated players where he shouldn't have, but it was nice to actually see players dig each other out on the pitch and say, no, you've got to come this extra couple of yards this way, move to the left, you know, shuffle back five, those kind of things. So that was really, really nice today. And they didn't take any stick either. Like, I thought Ox was so good down the right-hand side. You saw him absolutely, you know, I think Mkhitaryan beat him once and he was like, no, I'm not having that again. Put him on his ass. Maybe Ox could have been booked during the game for a couple of his fouls, but he, you know, they just didn't take any stick. And I thought Welbeck as well, second half in particular, he was a lot better leading the line. His movement was a lot better and he was trying to drag the defence about. Getting in between two centre-backs who haven't played together for a long time as well. You saw that a lot in the first half, Aaron Ramsey making those runs and they really weren't sure whether to track him or not or where to go.
Yeah, he, as you say, second half, he definitely became much more of a focal point and did a very, very good job. Couple of quick highlights before we talk about some individual performances. If you nip along to my timeline now, last retweet from at MJ underscore Bow, B-O-H underscore. All I'm going to say is a Henry Hoover and a line of cocaine. That's all I'm going to say. Just go and look at it. It's brilliant. Not that we ever would encourage people to have drugs on this show, ever. Moving swiftly onwards before we get taken off the air. The other two highlights came from the Arsenal bench. I don't know if either of you two saw this. The passing of Maltesers by the ground staff.
Oh, yeah.
That's a particular highlight that Gary Neville picked up on. Love that one.
Very naughty.
And speaking of the ground staff, also a picture I retweeted. I don't know who it is, but one of the groundskeepers when Mourinho got up and was audibly moaning, and he's just sat there with this little grin, this shit-eating grin on his face, just going, brilliant. It's a quality picture, really is. So, yeah, two highlights there. Right, let's get back to the game then and talk about some individual performances. We'll start with the positives because that's what I like to do. Drew, Aaron Ramsey's taken a lot of stick this season, rightly so, in my opinion, for large amounts. But when credit is worthwhile given, it has to be given. I thought he was very good today, very, very good. There's still some decision making where you look at it and you go, but I think that's the same with any of the players in these in this squad. But overall, his performance, you know, there was more appetite, seemed to be more sort of box to boxness. That's not even a word, but you know what I mean. And his overall sort of hunger for getting on the end of passes and putting a tackle in and tracking his man as well. I thought it was very, very good today. So what did you think of his performance overall?
I think it was more reminiscent of the Ramsey we saw in the seasons that we all like to refer back to as the player that we all hoped he developed into consistently. I think Lee Dixon mentioned it on my commentary that when you take more of the creative responsibilities away from Ramsey and just let him track back when he can and make those late runs into the box that you almost got that goal early on in the first half. I think he's so good at understanding what channels to make runs into based off of the run of play. I think that if you allow him to do that more and take more of that, leave the creativity up to, you know, whether it's Urzel Sanchez or Granit Xhaka, whoever it might be, you just highlight what he's best at. And we can say that about a lot of our players. Then you're going to get more performances like this. And I think this is why some people called for maybe playing him in Urzel's position and then putting in someone like a Mohamed Elneny in where Ramsey was. And then you can highlight that even more. Just remove the creativity from him. Because I think when Ramsey struggles, when he tries to do too much, especially when he's on the ball, and I think that's when you see those passes, he gives the ball away. He tries to beat two, three men, he gives the ball away. I think if you limit those opportunities and then highlight the ones that I mentioned before about him making runs, getting looks at goal, drawing runners away, making space for others, when he does that very, very well. I think if you use him in that regard, then I think you're going to see more of this from him. It's just a matter of him finding consistency as well. And we can say that about a lot of our players, but I thought he was much better, especially comparatively to what we saw at White Hart Lane.
I think, as you say, I think that's a very good point. I know a lot of people have said in the chat box there, they didn't think he was that great first half. I did think he was very, very sort of steady first half, and second half, I say, definitely got better. And I think sometimes that, I know sometimes we get accused of this on this show, but I think sometimes people are just so used to players doing certain things that they almost look for them to do those things. And I think you have to balance that out. And yeah, some players make mistakes and some players make the same mistakes again and again, but when they do good things, you have to highlight them. And I thought he was very good today. Speaking of good, John, I don't know if you'll agree with me here, but we'll give it a go. I thought that was Laurent Koscielny's best game for weeks, months, maybe even. I thought he really led by example today. There was the one awkward moment when Rob Holding sort of played him into trouble. Yeah. And as you say, he got a toe on it, which was, to be fair to him, he reacted pretty quickly, given the fact I don't think he expected the ball to come back that way. But overall, as I say, he knew when to foul, if you know what I mean by that. He took players out when he needed to. He was commanding in the air, good on the deck, passing range was decent. And as you said with us, and I noticed Laurent Koscielny was very vocal today as well, and very organised, particularly with a youngster like Holding alongside him. So that's the player that we know we've got in Koscielny, and I did think he was very good today. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that's what we've been missing from him for the last couple of games, to be honest. I think there's been, because I think it's partly down to the whole team, to be honest, not performing. then you can, people will zero in on a particular player. And Koscielny has got some stick, rightly so, but today was much better. He was a lot stronger on the ball. He was up against Martial, who was really, really quick. You know, he kept with him all the time, was trying to force him wide, making any rash challenges, which he sometimes he can do, you know, those last ditch challenges. And the fouls that he did commit, that were intentional, you know, when he was making them on the halfway line, just brilliant. Absolutely super. It's exactly what you wanted to see. You know, when obviously as I grew up watching Arsenal, it was Tony Adams and players like that. And when I went on to play Sunday League and got slower and slower and went and played centre back, if I was running back from a corner or something, when I tried to be a hero and score a header, guess what? I never scored. on my way back, I'd make sure as they're breaking to make a foul and, you know, it's on the halfway line. You can sort of plead with the ref as you're running off. Oh, it's fine. You don't need to book me. I'm not normally up here. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm getting a nosebleed. And he just did the right things today. You know, stopping things at the right time. He was trying to help out holding when he could. I think having, you know, experienced player in Monreal next to him as well really does help him. And just the whole shape of the team now with Xhaka sitting in front of those three and just giving a little bit more extra protection, because when we were playing 4-2-3-1, the two centre mids didn't really sit. Both of them went forward and they were so exposed, and they always had people running onto them now. So I think it just makes them a little bit more comfortable. But yeah, it's a much improved performance, and he needs to do that more regularly now, because he is, you know, I don't see when Per's going to get back into the team. Definitely not this season, and I'm surprised if he play at all next year, to be honest, maybe in a couple of cup games. So he's the senior man in the back line now, and he should be leading all these young players. And he's a really good example for someone like Rob Holding, because, you know, when we got Koscielny, people weren't keen on him at all, to be honest. You know, it did look like it was another one of these, oh, Arsenal's gone and got a cheap French centre-back and it's not going to work out. But he's turned into a very, very good player that a lot of big clubs would want to get hold of.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And we are going to have to keep hold of him this summer, because Marseille are going to offer us quite a lot of money for him, if you believe the rumours. And I've certainly heard words to those effects. So I think he's ingrained in Arsenal now. I think he's very much a centre-half who knows he's at the right club for him. And I would hope he would stay, but let's hope he doesn't go anywhere. Drew, another player I want to highlight for individual sort of praise before we look at a group together and maybe some negatives, which we have to balance the show out. But Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, ironic really, given the fact that a few weeks ago I think even Arsene Wenger said that he was better centrally, that he thought that would be his position, you know, that's where he saw his future. It's ironic that since he's moved to a quote-unquote wing back, he's been reborn. His crossing is improved. We saw that with the second goal today. His general energy is fantastic. His defensive responsibility is very good. He's always getting back in. I asked this question last week. I'll ask it again. Is he a player that we have to be essentially doing everything we can to keep hold of, maybe ahead of some of the bigger names?
I would think so. I still, I mean, obviously I'd like to keep a lot of the players, but obviously there's players I want to go, but that's another discussion for another time. But I think we do need to keep him. I think he's maybe one of the younger players that can actually realize his potential. We've had quite a few over the years that have fallen well short of the mark, but I think he can actually get up to about where we expect. But I think the thing is I don't know if I would say that he is as defensively responsible as you give him credit for today. I think he was better today than he was against Spurs. I don't think that's even in doubt. I think the issue is he has such a good turn of pace that he can track back quickly, and I think that sort of masks the fact that a lot of times he was caught very far out. Also, Holding did a very good job covering the space left in behind when he would go further forward, but you saw it early. United attacked down our right-hand side quite a few times. Actually, they overloaded our right-hand side early on in the match because I think they recognized Ox as a potential weakness given his performance against Spurs, that he would be tasked with going up and trying to provide service from wider areas. And I think that if United continued to attack there, I don't think Ox would have been as effective as he was later on in the match. I think he would have been a bit more winded, given a bit more questions asked by United. And I think they would have had to cause him to not venture forward as much. So I think in that regard, I think United allowed him to have a bit more freedom in going forward by not continuously hitting what is potentially one of the weaknesses pre-match. But on the whole, I'm happy he performed a bit better, obviously. But I just think that as he grows as a player, as he continues to develop, he has to understand the balance between when you go forward and when you sit back, when you maybe play a ball from deeper instead of running with the ball. I think that's why Monreal is so good on the left. And further forward, as some of the guys mentioned in the chat box, I think if we're going to keep going with three at the back, I think Mustafi should come in. I think Monreal should go in on his left wing back, because I think he gets that understanding. That's also something that maybe Monreal can teach Ox, and maybe try to get him to understand a bit more if he's to play in that role. If he's to play century, that's a whole different development story that is unrelated to what we're talking about now. But again, it was better from him, but I think he needs to understand balance a bit more. But I'm happy you got to assist. I'm happy you played better. So for the moment, it was good.
Yeah, you stole my thunder on the defensive setup, but we will come on to that in a second. John, I want to give Drew a week off from Ozil watch, because I always seem to pick on him every week.
Just ask, damn it.
No. I'll save a certain Chilean for you. But John, what do you make of Meza? I mean, he's you know, there's we've seen stories obviously in the last week that have come out about Aaron Lennon, for example, and I don't want to sort of go into that too much, but you see stories like that come out that nobody would necessarily have expected, and you see that people have private lives, and Mesut's private life has been, you know, it's been out there for a while that some people sort of think there's stuff going on in his private life, whether that be, you know, directly personal, whether it be family, whether it be relationships. Nobody seems to know, but he's not quite been himself pretty much since the start of the year. I said last week I was kind of done with him, because it just feels like a marriage that's sort of coming to an end, where both parties know each other are cheating and it's just a question of who moves out first. But, you know, today, largely, he was anonymous. You know, he didn't do a huge amount. Yes, he still puts himself about. His passing is always good, but then you expect that of a player of his ability. And then towards the end, when we're 2-0 up and confidence is up, you see him charging into the corner and putting in decent crosses and really moving about again. So is it purely down to confidence and maybe stuff that may be going on in his personal life that's affecting him? Or is it the contract talks? Or is it just the fact that this is Mesut and we just have to accept him as he is? Some days he'll be brilliant and other days he'll be down Tesco doing his shopping.
I think you obviously have to accept that sometimes the players won't turn up in a game. That happens. They'll have ups and downs, things that go on in their personal life. Everyone in the chat and everyone watching will know that whatever job you do, if you're having troubles away from work, it will affect your work performance. So that's obvious. I think the issue at the moment is more, you saw he improved as the team's confidence went up when we were 2-0 up, and that does tend to happen with him. There's then more space because you're against the team who are trying to push it forward a little bit and trying to get something out of the game, and they're kind of half defeated anyway, so it makes it easier for him. But I think the system doesn't really suit him. You know, the fact it's sort of labelled as 3-4-3, it's, we don't really play that. The wing backs do actually do their jobs and keep the width and get the balls in, but those sort of two wide men of the striker, they have to provide width at times, but then sort of come in as inside forwards, and that's not really what Mesut Ozil is. Sanchez can do it, but today I don't think he particularly did, but obviously you get onto that in a minute. But Ozil wants to be in the middle and affecting play, and what you saw today was a lot of the time he was coming back and he was almost the centre midfielder, and Ramsey was the run sort of running on and taking up the inside forward position, if you like, that Ozil should be in the team at least is listed as playing as. So I think it has a lot to do with the shape. I don't know what his future is for the club. The issue I've got with him is, if you're going to keep him, then you have to build the entire team around him. There's no two ways about it, because, yeah, there's games where you might go and play, okay, not this season because we've been very poor, but traditionally there is games where you would go and play West Brom or Palace or, you know, all these teams that we've done badly against this season. But normally those games, Ozil's going to be fine. He'll do stuff. He'll get assists. He'll get goals, that kind of thing. But in the big games, he doesn't turn up. And I think you're only going to get those performances out of him in those big matches if the rest of the team is built around him and he has players that are constantly moving, understand his game. He's got to have someone in midfield who can get him the ball. Xhaka is capable of doing that, but then you obviously have to have the right player next to Xhaka. And it's very difficult to get the best out of him without putting every single thing around him in place. Whereas I think there's other players in the team that are more flexible. And I think Ozil's biggest problem is maybe that not that the Premier League is a better league than say La Liga or Bundesliga or anything like that, because I don't think it is, but it's a different type of league where you won't get as much time on the ball and you don't get quite as much space, and that makes it much more difficult for him, for that type of player. And if you look around the leagues now, there really aren't that many sort of pure specialist number 10s anymore. They're just not, they don't really exist. You can't really afford to have them in the team. So either he needs to adapt his game slightly, which I think since he's come to Premier League, he has tried to, you've seen he's got a lot, you know, he's got bigger and tried to get a bit more physical, which I think he has improved on. Or you have to set the entire team around him. So I think it really depends on what happens in the summer with the rest of the squad. But yeah, again, he wasn't superb today, but neat and tidy passing. But you do always want more from him, especially in the big games where it's going to matter more.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. I think if you look back to like some of his best seasons, where particularly when he was at Real Madrid, I mean, the hair was different. So obviously we need to get that back. It's playing with a player like Angel Di Maria, I think, as well, was really crucial to how good he was then. And even lesser players, Nuri Sahin was there then. I think Kaká was still around at that time. Madrid used the bombing on fullbacks. Marcelo definitely down one side, and I'm trying to think of the other one was Contrao, I suppose, would have been the other side at that point. They always had constant pace and constant runners around them, didn't they? Whereas with us, it seems to be we might have one runner, which is usually Alexis, but the rest, it tends to be very pretty patterns sideways rather than somebody cutting in and getting onto those final balls.
You know, the few times today where you had, if you've got Alexis, Welbeck and Rambo all running forwards, and then you've got the wing backs and stuff, that gives Mesut those options. You pick him out and he's got, you know, 5-6 players. Most people will look and go, oh, that's the pass to make, and we've completely missed with the best one, which is the one he makes, you know, to someone else. But today it was too few runners around him. But in those situations where, you know, people aren't paying to, you know, get the best out of him, he then has to go and impose himself in the games and make things happen, which is, I think, why you see a lot of times when the play does slow down and we're struggling a little bit, you'll see him drift to the left-hand side to go and find Alexis. Or 1-2s, and you see they can just go 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, like through three or four players. Eventually, it does tend to break down, but you can see that he trusts Alexis that something's going to happen and he can make something happen with him because he knows where he's going to go. And you can still see, despite the fact I don't think either of them had a particularly good game today, that when they do get the ball, they instantly look for each other before any other player because they know that, oh, I'm going to put this ball in here blind and Ozil should be there or Alexis should be there, vice versa, you know, whoever it is. So I mean, you've got to put that team around him, otherwise you're ever going to get the best out of him.
Yeah, it's a trust element. And as you say, using the tools you've got, it's no good trying to build a garage with a hammer, is it? I mean, you know, you've got to use the right equipment to build what you're looking to build. So speaking of which, Drew, that leads us nicely on to our Chilean friends. Now,
are you sure you shouldn't want me to comment on this as well?
If you really want to,
because I think there's one thing that we are also kind of missing though.
Go for it.
The one thing about Ozil is he's not the player to start the attacking move. He's the player to make the pass at the end of the attacking move that creates the chance. And I think when you see the best of him and you want to, everyone highlights how he plays for Germany and how it's so much better than how he plays for Arsenal. There's a particular reason for that. It's not just because Germany, even though they've become, they're a possession-based team, they do understand space, movement, interchangeability. They understand all that. But the problem is Ozil isn't the one to start the move there. Toni Kroos is. And then we see Ozil when he's at Real Madrid, he didn't start to move, Xabi Alonso did. And then when you had Mesut Ozil at Werder Bremen, Thorsten Frings started the moves there, I think it was. So I think that's the difference. And right now, we had that with Santi Cazorla, and then when Cazorla is now out, he would always start the move from further back, and then Ozil would get the ball, he would look up, and then by the time he got the ball, he would have to make just the one pass, and then it was incisive, and then that was it. But when he has time to dawdle on the ball and when he's the one that has to start the move, I think that's when he struggles. And that's the issue with that, as we say, that traditional static central number 10. That's why they're not nearly as effective as they used to be now, because mobility in modern football is so heavily important that's why you have players like, and I hate to say it, but players like Philippe Coutinho or Kevin De Bruyne, or, you know, and you and John can rattle off a ton of other players, some say Luke Una or Serie A, I could go on and on about Bundesliga, but these are the types of players that are creative players, but they're not so specialized, so they just need to make just that one pass. It just doesn't work anymore. And especially it won't especially work in this system. I think it's also something I touched on in the piece I just wrote, is that if you were to put Alex Iwobi in for Ozil for today, and John just brought it up, that's a position where that player needs to understand movement. He needs to be mobile. He needs to run to the channels. He needs to also go wide if he can. Ozil can do this. Someone like Alex Iwobi can. Even someone like Aaron Ramsey could have done it. And I just don't think that, I mean, I absolutely love Mesut Ozil. And as I've been saying for a while, I've been following Mesut Ozil since he was coming through at Schalke. But
he had that awful hair.
absolutely abhorrent. But the thing is that as much as I do love him, he's such a specialized player now, and football has gone away from that. And I just think that as much as I love him, I do think that we have to stray away from using him and sell him. And that's a question that people have been asking for the last couple weeks: should we sell Ozil, should we keep him, whatever have you? But I just don't think he suits what we're trying to do anymore. And I mean, if moving on to
just quickly before you
Sanchez,
do
or, okay.
very very quickly before you do, I do wonder how different Mesut Ozil's Arsenal career would have been if we had have signed Sami Khedira when we had the chance. just wonder
I'm not,
how different
I'm not saying anything. Let's go on, let's move on, because I'm gonna start ranting again, so it's fine.
Alexis Sanchez, then let's talk about him now. I've got an interesting, well, I say interesting, I've got a view on this that I don't think everyone's gonna agree with me. John will back me up on this, and I'm sure you will, Drew, as well. I think the ABW family are growing very frustrated with Alexis, and I think, I know Jace has said a few times, and I think our Steve has said a few times, that, you know, they're sick of him giving the ball away and his tantrums and everything. Now, don't get me wrong, the tantrums are a little bit, it is a little bit showpiece. I think Jace has said a number of times, you know, he knows when the camera's on him. He's a clever guy. The one thing I would say is that, however frustrating he's been, and today he was, I mean, he was marked out of the game by Axel Foley, for fuck's sake. I mean, that says it all. But he's still a player that, for me, if we're going to take the step back up, because let's make no mistake, we are a step down on last season, wherever we finish. If we're going to make the step back up into, you know, genuine league contention, genuine Champions League contention, we have to do everything we can to keep Alexis, and we have to play to his strengths. And much like Mesut Ozil, if we're going to have a player like Alexis, you sign him knowing what you're going to get. You know he's going to be petulant. You know he's going to be stroppy. And you know he's going to give up possession. The one thing that I would say, though, is, you know, we have to try and keep this player. I know he's frustrating, but I just wonder what your sort of thoughts were overall today. Because, as I say, he does divide opinion, but he is the one, arguably one and a half, if you include us, or two, players in our squad that are genuinely world class, that would command a fee and that would be wanted by everybody else if we were to sell him. Do you agree with that, or are you still in the camp of I've had enough kind of situation?
Just be me or John.
For you first, I'll ask John in a second afterwards.
I think we've said this for a while now, that we struggle with getting the best out of all our players. It doesn't matter who they are, it doesn't matter if it's Lucas Sanchez, it doesn't matter if it's Matthew Debuchy. The issue, and if you look at it today, I agree with Dom. I don't think Sanchez is all that good at all. I think he moves off the ball well. I think that's all well and good. You know, he'll work hard in certain areas. I think that's all well and good. But I think the issue for me is that look how deep he would come for the ball. A lion's share of his time spent on the pitch was near the midfield circle. I don't think that's what you want to see from Alexis Sanchez. And when you see how well he has, when he has played well this season, he's only worried about getting forward, getting into the final third, getting looks at goal, maybe creating for others. This whole having him come so deep and then turn the ball over in midfield, that's when you're going to get the Sanchez we're seeing now. And I think that's, again, that's down to instructions they're getting. Maybe he's not getting instructions. Maybe Wenger said, go on and play however you like. But I think the issue is, again, we're not highlighting the things he does do very well. And I think when that happens, as with a lot of our players, you don't get the end product that you're looking for. And I think a lot of people have commented on the fact that Sanchez just doesn't seem like he's a team player. I think that's one of the issues he had at Barcelona. To be completely honest with you, I think he wants to do what he wants to do. And I think that's why he succeeds for Chile, because Chile play a strict system. that is meant for Sanchez doing what he wants to do. And I think they get the best of him in that regard. And I think it can be supported by the fact that Chile works very hard as a team. Their midfield core is very strong. And I think that allows Sanchez to just do whatever he feels like doing. But I think in this system, I think in Barcelona as well, that he has to become more of a focused force in which you see good things from him. Let him get forward. Let him get looks at goal. Let him take players on. But this whole coming deeper and trying to be now a creative, almost like central attacking midfielder type player isn't what you want from him. That's not what we bought him for. It's not what he needs to be used for. And I think if he keeps doing that, more performances like today, he's going to then go into the Ozil camp as if do we actually need him. I think we need the level of his ability we need at the club. But if he's not going to be able to fit into what we want to do overall on the tactics board, then it's another problem. I'd love to keep him, but we have to bring him in and make him understand that we need to be him to be doing certain things and other things he needs to get rid of in this game. So,
and I'll come on to John on this point as well, and some excellent points there, Drew. I mean, firstly, the one thing I have to say is if we want another creative midfielder, we might as well just go and sign Lanzini. It's never gonna get old. John, is there not an argument that, and this is the flip side to that, that yes, you know, he does have his petulance. I mean, a few people have put in the chat box there that every team has a diva. I don't see anyone at Chelsea, for example, slating Eden Hazard this season, despite the fact he basically went on strike last season. He threw a diva strop. He's now their best player. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Messi, Ronaldo. Ronaldo basically has a team created for his need. However good a footballer he is, the team is built. Could basically hold around him.
Simple.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. But is there?
And he won the Euros as his first stint as manager, obviously as well. Portugal.
Yeah. All right. Right. But is there an argument that maybe what Alexis Sanchez is doing in this team is that he's looking around at some of the players who have got in our squad and thinking, right, well, you're not good. You're not as good as me. You're not good enough. You're not good enough. My argument would be if you sign two, maybe three might be a bit of a stretch, but you sign two top quality players, i.e. a proven goal scorer who's going to get you goals and a midfielder who's got, you know, really real genuine ability and genuine mobility, maybe then, or even a right-sided midfielder who's going to complement him on the other side, and then maybe he starts to trust players more and not just trust Mesut. So is it an argument that maybe the squad we've got now is not actually playing to the level of a footballer that he is? And that's why people don't see the other side of the argument when he gives the ball away and throws a hissy fit.
I think the criticism of him is fair, but the thing I would point out is that when we were on our good run of form earlier in the season, he was one of our best players. And because the team was functioning, he wasn't dropping back deep to come and get the ball. He wasn't getting in other players' positions and taking their space and causing the structure of the team to collapse a little bit. As the team has got progressively worse, obviously not today, but he's wanted to affect the game, and that's what big players do. If the team's not playing well, these big players in teams, when you say, you know, Ronaldo at Madrid and Messi at Barca, and yeah, okay, he's not their level, they're ridiculous, they're not even human, the fucking things they do, but they go and get the ball and they make stuff happen. And Alexis is trying to do exactly the same thing. The issue is that he's giving the ball away because he is that type of player, because he is a flair player who takes risks. And the deeper and deeper you get to come and get the ball and give it away, the more dangers you're going to cause your own team, because giving it away on your opponent's 18-yard box is fine. That happens. That's not a problem. But doing it on your halfway line, when you're behind your own midfield and you're just two centre-backs there, that causes real issues. So I think, as frustrating as he is, this team would be nowhere without him. I mean, if he wasn't in the squad for the last, 3 years, I've got no idea where this club would be, because, honestly, the amount of goals and stuff he's got. And doesn't forget, he's got, 20 goals this season, I think?
Yeah, short memory.
Yeah, it's not like he's been awful all season. I do think his performances have dipped, but I think that's been a general trend in the team. But if you're not going to get him the ball, he's the type of player who wants to come and get it. You know, we accuse Ozil sometimes of hiding in games and only going to get the ball when it's easy and not sort of showing for it in the difficult matches. Alexis never hides. He might make a mistake. You know, he might cock up and give the ball away or get frustrated and berate a teammate, that kind of thing. But he will never hide and he will keep on trying. So I think you have to take the good with the bad. What Drew said about Chile, that team, I'd love to be able to say that the problem is because we've got Ozil, we can't do this. But if for example, one was to go and it was Ozil rather than Alexis, or I think it, if anything happens, it's probably going to be the other way around. But if it was that way, it would be amazing to be able to say, right, there's a striker, there's this guy, whatever, and give Alexis that free roll. So we are basically playing two up front because he essentially, he doesn't really play wide for Chile. He doesn't really play as a striker. He kind of plays where he wants. Mm. He plays it off of, I can't remember the guy's name now, Vargas.
Vargas, yeah, up front, yeah.
Yeah, you know, he plays off him and he goes wide and he drops and, you know, you see him and Vidal arguing with each other at times, which is always funny. He's got so much about him as a player that you can't really complain because he still gives you so much for the team. So I think there's a case for other players sometimes standing up to him. That definitely needs to happen. You know, we saw that with Ramsey today. Ramsey, for me, made the right pass. There was no way he was going to get that, you know, when he was at the byline, he tried to fire it into Welbeck as hard as he could. There's no way he's going to get it past three United players to Sanchez. Sanchez shouldn't have had a go at him there. But he's that type of player because he wants to do it. He thinks he's the only one who could do it, can save the team. That's what he wants to be. And Rambo actually stood up to him, which was nice. You know, I had to go back. And I don't think there's enough players in the team that sometimes do that to him, to bark him down. And I think kind of a little bit of that maybe comes from the manager as well. Because he's such a special player, Arsene isn't going to say, you know, Alexis, you need to set up this part of the pitch a bit more. You know, you need to stop dropping into this area so much. Because he's spoken about it in the last couple of interviews, saying that Alexis drops too deep sometimes and it can affect other players on the team. So I think other players in the team need to dig him out a little bit. The manager maybe does as well. You know, not necessarily, you know, throwing boots at him, Ferguson style or whatever, but just having a conversation. Some players need that. And you know, Pep had that frustration with him at Barcelona. Sometimes he wouldn't always listen, but you can't afford, you can't say that we're going to be a club that's going to next season and for season coming challenge for a title and eventually get our place, you know, where get our club to the position where we can genuinely challenge for Champions League by losing players like Alexis Sanchez. Because if you ask me, where are you going to find a player that's like him that can score goals, create chances and everything else? For the money we paid for him, it's so difficult nowadays, you know, because there's very few players that, you know, he's the closest we could have got in terms of getting Suarez.
I agree.
You know, he's not quite there, but he's as close as you're ever going to get at the moment with what's on the market.
We essentially took him when Barcelona took Suarez, didn't we? He kind of got forced out by the Suarez signing. So, you know, and as you say, like every team, you know, every team has a mercurial player. He is ours. And, you know, sometimes it is a case of be careful what you wish for. It's all right saying you want him out. Well, yeah, and who do you bring in? And maybe, and I'll end the Alexis debate on this point, but maybe we're just not used to, as Arsenal fans, particularly in recent seasons, Alexis Sanchez, whether you like him or you don't, is a winner. And too many of our players are not used to winning and are not winners. And I think sometimes that sort of win at all cost mentality, maybe we could do with a little bit more from some of the other players than that.
Just quickly on this, he's obviously not the same player. And Thierry Henry is very much beloved by Arsenal fans, by the majority, rather than the odd few who hate him for going to Barcelona. But I remember watching Henry and being frustrated in a lot of games. And thinking, stop giving him the ball because he's not doing
it.
Why has everything got to go through him? And he was arrogant and everything else as well.
Yep.
But he'd win games for you.
Exactly.
He'd do some magic in a game and he could be piss poor for 80 minutes and he'd still pull out a piece of magic.
But the thing is, I think Henry won more games for us than he caused us to have struggles. I think the difference is Alexis isn't there yet. I'm not saying he can't get there yet because obviously for me, Henry's in a different class and obviously I think history speaks for itself. But I think the biggest issue is he comes deeper to get the ball because he wants things to go quickly. He wants the ball. He wants to move forward. When you saw him at Barca, he got service from midfield. So he was more worried about just getting forward.
Yeah.
With us, he comes deep because he wants the ball. Now, I think that's indicative of the fact that the possession buildup, I think, bores him to tears. So he just wants to give me the ball. I'll do it myself. I think if we're more incisive with our creativity, he'll get less frustrated. He'll get more chances. He can get further forward more consistently to affect the run of play in the final third. I think that's the issue. I think, and then again, that's why you're missing the Santi Cazorla type. We really are.
That goes back to when we were playing better in the season. You saw Alexis playing much better because he didn't have to wait for the ball.
No, he didn't. He got the ball. He got the ball maybe 25 yards out. He would beat a player to have a shot at goal while he has to cut in.
Yeah.
I think people, when you can allow him to do that, that's when you see the best of him. Right now, you're not seeing the best of him because of the fact that he has to wait so long to get the ball, and then he gets frustrated and things break down. He takes space away centrally when he tries to come central to get the ball. I think it's all a domino effect. So I think if you avoid that first domino dropping, you see the best of him again.
And people make a big deal about the Pep Guardiola thing. The bottom line is, whether you like, and clearly I don't, but whether you like Guardiola or not, I don't think any player will ever be 100% a Guardiola player other than Messi. No. You know, he always wants 100% more than a player is willing to give. Ask Sergio Aguero about that, you know, who's been absolutely brilliant in the Premier League every single season for Man City. In comes Pep, and Pep demands more. So, you know, sometimes you just have to take the rough with the smooth and accept that you've got a winner, and his attitude may not be the same as everybody else's. I want to leave the Alexis debate there for a minute, because there's one other thing I want to touch on before we look at the top four and take some questions as well. This back three thing, it would appear now that it's not just an experiment. It does appear that that's what we're going to be running with for the time being. We sort of briefly touched on it earlier on. I think when Mustafi is fit, there's a big debate about who you would play. Now, for me, I don't know if you guys would agree, but for me, on current form right now, I would be playing Mustafi, Holding, and Koscielny as your main three. 100%. And I think Nacho Monreal is far better a left wing back than Gibbs is. And Oxlade-Chamberlain's been doing a very good job on the other side. And Hector Bellerin just needs to put his feet up and, you know, get that surgery that he needs doing and, you know, have a rest, because that kid is shot right now. So any arguments from either of you two that would be the five you'd pick?
That would be mine. That was the only thing I questioned today. And I think the reason he went with Gibbs and put Nacho in the back is because he didn't want to play Gabriel and he didn't have another option. So, yeah, I'd play those three. I really like Holding at the back, especially because his distribution is very comfortable on the ball, and he's got some really like some of his diagonal passes that he does are really, really impressive. And in a back three, it's so important. You look at Chelsea, I know David Luiz gets mocked a bit, but his passing is ridiculous sometimes. You have to have one player in that back three to be able to really deliver those really cutting balls, especially to the wing backs, because they're the ones who are really going to stretch the team, because you just want them to be on the sideline just getting chalk on the boots the whole game to stretch the opposition.
I think with the current team, I would rather see Mustafi, Koscielny, and Holding as the back three. Obviously, Monreal on the left. I would rather see Bellerin on the right and put Ox where Ozil is.
Yeah, agreed.
Because Ox, more direct, he can stretch their back four, as John mentioned before. He can beat players on the ball. He can beat you for pace. He's not afraid to shoot from distance. He likes to get into the box when he can. And I think Bellerin, even though his form has dipped a bit, whether it's down to injury or not, he understands at least the defensive side of the ball, maybe a little bit more than Ox, and he has when he's fully fit. He has a touch more turn of pace where he can recover a little bit more if he gets caught out, and we've seen that in seasons past and even this season. So I think that'd be a bit better for balance, and that gives us a front three that's incredibly mobile. I think that's how you cause problems for the forward.
Yeah, and I'm quite excited to see Mustafi in a back three as well, because I think you'll see the player that we all hoped we were buying at the start of the season. If he's got two other players alongside him and he's got a proper defensive screen, I think you'll see, because Mustafi for me is the classic example of a player who, I think he's very talented, but just tends to panic at times and sometimes can be a bit rash. I think if you build a team that's comfortable on the ball and you just say to him, just do what you're good at, he relaxes a bit more and he's less panicky. When he's got one partner and no one else behind him, I think he flaps, and that would be good. And
it's not just that, but when he's not getting cover in front of him, he often steps too much. Also, just real fast, Mustafi's not. You don't get into the German national team consistently if you're absolute garbage, considering what center defensive options.
I knew you were going to go for that.
I'm finished with that argument. Let's just.
I knew you were going to go for it. Just quickly, I'm just going to ask you both this question. Just a yes or no, or you can give a player's name. If I said to you that Thiago Silva and Marquinhos are available this summer, would you take either? And if so, which one would you take, John?
Marquinhos.
I agree with that.
Okay. Interesting.
Would I? I mean, I'd take him over having Gabriel, yeah. But then...
yeah, but I'd have you over Gabriel.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm better looking, but it's not difficult.
I'm not touching that.
That's what she said. No, we can go to football. It's weird because I'm not sure a centre back is necessarily what we need, because I don't want to put too much pressure on Rob Holding, because we always do this with young players. But he's very, very good, and I would like to see more of him. And we've also, you know, a lot of people forget about Callum Chambers, who's
Yeah.
You know, by all accounts, had a really, really good season for Borough. I know they're struggling, but he's got a lot of experience in defending there, because it's basically all they can do. And you know, everyone's been raving about him, so we've got some decent options. And you know, Mertesacker has got another year. I don't think he'll play a lot. I think at most he's going to get, you know, some.
He'll be the Arteta deal, won't it? Basically,
Carling Cup the one or year. Whatever it's called. You know, whoever it is sponsoring now, the League Cup games, you know, with some of the young kids, maybe he comes in there. So if we stick with a back three, then yeah, there's an argument for buying someone if you move Gabriel out. If we're going to go back to a back four, I don't think you need to buy anyone, because you've got. You know, you've got two experienced centre backs. You've got two very promising young centre backs who can learn, and you can always keep Gabriel for a season if you really need.
And potentially Kolasinac being added, as Aiden puts in the chat. Left full back, you've got.
Don't really bank on it yet. Just
No, I agree.
You've got the fit. You know, the option of Nacho as well, who's shown that he can play centre half if you need. I don't think defence is necessarily one of our key areas to worry about in terms of the transfer market.
Yeah, interesting. I think both players are likely to be available this summer, so I just thought I'd chuck that one into the mixer. But yeah, agreed. Okay, before we take some questions to round off, I just want to quickly talk about the top four. John, myself and Jace are the only two deluded Mongs left in this group. That we've been, well, I think Jace has been saying it as long as I have, that I said, I think it was after the, was it before or after the, I think it was before the Man City game, we were having this terrible run and everybody was, you know, cutting themselves in dark rooms and rocking back and forth. And I sat here with my book of delusion and went, no, it'll be fine. It'll all be fine. I still think we'll make the top four. I still do. And it's not so much the reason I have faith in Arsenal. It's I don't have faith in Liverpool, Man City or Man United, to be honest. And we've got these games in hand. Now, granted, the cliche goes, you always want the points on the board. But Southampton away in midweek, you know, obviously Saints got a draw at Anfield today, which actually benefited us probably. Now, at home, they'll be required to come out more because, as John and Drew, you both know, we know a Saints fan and all is not particularly rosy in the Saints garden at the moment. So I think they'll want a home performance. If we can go there and win, which I know is a big if, given recent performances up there, but if we can go there and win, we've then got Stoke away, which we know what we're going to get there. And I think we've got, is it Everton at home? And who's the other fixture?
We've got Sunderland at home, and then Everton at home is the last game, or league game.
So. There you go. So both home games, I think, are winnable, particularly Sunderland, definitely, and Everton's season will probably be done by then. So it's two big away games. I mean, all of a sudden, I think they said it on Sky, we played two more games before Liverpool and Man United play again. We could be within a point of Liverpool and, I think, above United by then. So, I mean, where do you both sit on top four? Is it still achievable, or do you think that as good as we were in patches today, it could all fall apart again on Wednesday? John, do you want to start us off on that?
Mathematically, yes. Will we do it?
It's the hope that kills.
I don't want to get my hopes up. it's the hope that kills. And I almost just want to go, you know, just give us whatever position and just jump to the FA Cup final. And, you know, and take this nice good feeling, you know, take this nice good feeling into the Cup final and the sort of the decent performance and everything and try and get the win against Chelsea. I think maybe, have United got to play Tottenham as well, haven't they?
Yeah, they play them next weekend at the theatre.
Yeah, so I think we could finish above United. City, I don't know. Who did they spank on it? Was it Palace?
Palace. They got left. They got West. So they got West Brom and Leicester left, I think I'm right.
Okay, so they've got like two wins there because West Brom are done for the season. Leicester are done, aren't they?
I'll just double check that, but I'm pretty sure that's who they got left.
I think we've left it too late. I really do. I know we got the games in hand and everything, but I hate that. I want the points. We do kind of have the habit of when the pressure's off, we perform better. And I think maybe there was a little bit of that in today as well. The kind of the acceptance that, right, we know Tottenham are finishing above us. That game's done now. And no one expects us to finish top four, so there's no pressure on us or the team. So maybe that helps us a little bit. But yeah, we just got to hope for other teams, I think, to drop points. But I can't see them dropping enough. I think
or
one
Adidas
of those.
Winning all four.
Yeah, no, I think one of those two away games we'll end up with a draw in. The Southampton one more likely than the other, to be honest. So
Drew, here's the lineup then. So you've got Man City, you've got Leicester at home next weekend. They play West Brom at home the following Tuesday, and they finish with Watford away, who, if there was ever a team that were on the beach, it would be them. As for my page is just stuck now. As for Man United, they are at home to Spurs next weekend. Oh, the bloody page is frozen again. Okay, I'll come back to those fixtures. But, based on that, here you go, it's refreshed. So they got Vigo, obviously, midweek. So off the back of that, depending on how they get on, they've got Spurs away next weekend. They finish with Southampton away. Sorry, they finish with Palace at home. And then Liverpool have got two games left, away at West Ham, which would be an interesting one next Sunday, and then home to Middlesbrough, which you think will be a gimme. So based on those fixtures and what we've got left, where do you see us finishing, or what chances do you give us in the top four?
I think you and I spoke about this again before we started recording. I think the one we can catch is Liverpool. Simply because I genuinely think that – I think West Ham will get a result if not beat them. Sophie just mentioned before that West Ham turned up against Spurs. They actually outplayed Spurs. They played very, very well. And I think they have maybe something to prove later on in the season. They're in decent form. They haven't lost in their last five. I think West Ham will never – I think they'll obviously beat Borough, but I think Spurs will beat United at home, so we can maybe leapfrog United there as well. I don't know if we'll get top four. I think maybe the best we'll do. I think we'll obviously get fifth. I don't know if we'll get top four simply because for us, the question is going to be, can we build on this result? That's the first thing. And then the second thing is, if you look at our last six fixtures, when we've lost, we have been blanked and we got smashed at Palace. We didn't score a goal. We got outplayed by Spurs, should have lost 6-0, didn't score a goal. And the last four wins we've had, we have three clean sheets. It's, for me, it just depends on how we play moving forward. Can we limit the amount of chances and goals we allow? And can we play well moving forward? I think I generally think destiny is more or less in our hands, because I think teams above us are going to drop points. United will drop points. I think Liverpool will drop points. I don't necessarily think City will, but I think City will end up third. If you look at it, they have, I think they'll beat Leicester because they're at home, and Leicester absolute dog shit away from the King Power Stadium. I think they have two wins all year away from home. And then they have Watford, who I think they'll beat. And then they also have West Brom, again, at home. I think they'll win as well. They've only lost once at the end of the season. So I think it's going to be a matter of can we catch Poole? I think that's the biggest question. But I don't know if we can. I think I'm with John. I think we did leave it a bit late. I think we'll end up fifth. But I just don't see us getting Champions League next season.
The big problem I see is that I can still see, even in today's performance, which was a lot better, don't get me wrong, and I thought we played quite well, especially in the second half. There's still weaknesses, and I still worry about the mentality of the team. Like the Rooney chance, if he looks up and squares that to Juan Mata and they go 1-0 up,
changes
I can see our team completely collapse. Rather than fighting back, which I think is the one issue, because we are still giving up some chances. We're better than we have been, and today was, very good result and a good performance. But I'd still worry if we go into a game, particularly away, because our away form this season has been dreadful, and we've conceded so many goals away from home, that if we concede first, I don't see us, getting back into the game to win it. Maybe to get a draw, but I'm not sure. So I know it's the old cliche of whoever scores first is so important, but years gone past, it wouldn't really matter. If we did concede, we could still come back and fight in games, and you had that belief. But I think this season, because the players are so worried, the moment they concede a goal, they go, they collapse, and they just think, it's happening. Yeah, it's happening again.
I think another issue is, games in hand are all well and good, but we now have four fixtures in 2 weeks. I mean, that plays a part as well. And also, not to say, I'm not trying to maybe be too negative, but we do struggle historically with Stoke away. That's not going to be all that great. And it would be us to just go to Saints, who are struggling, and then not perform. We also, historically, lately, we haven't done too well against Saints on the whole. It's just, I don't think it's all that easy. And I know that you don't rate a lot of Everton's players, particularly one certain Belgian center forward, but Everton won't be easy either. I think, obviously, we'll beat Sunderland handedly for obvious reasons, but I love that we have games in hand, and I think the balance of it is on us to go ahead and get the results, but I don't think, bar Sunderland, these are three not easy fixtures. And we, as John said, we do play well with the pressure off, but knowing we have games in hand doesn't also put the pressure on us, because we know we have to get points in order to catch these teams ahead of us. So I think it's a bit of a balance. I just think that look at the positives today, target the weaknesses we did have, and go in. And obviously the next match is crucial. If we go ahead and beat Saints midweek, then I think we'll go ahead and I think we'll win at the weekend. I think if we don't get a result against Saints, then we're going to struggle at Stoke away. I think the next match is crucial. We win that, we have a chance. If we get a draw or worse, then I think Champions League is completely out of the question. So.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, actually. I think if we go to Southampton, and particularly if we score the first goal and we're able to grind out a result up there, which I think it will be a grind out, I'll put my neck on the line. I think if we beat Southampton, I'd back us to win the last three and squeak fourth. If we don't, because I happen to think that Spurs will... I think they'll take something from United. I'm not actually sure they'll win at Old Trafford, but I think they'll take... Was it Old Trafford or the horrible place that they dwell in?
I think United will take Dele Alli and Harry Kane probably in the summer, but
which will be hilarious.
It's at White Hart Lane after United play
after the Europa League.
That's why I think Spurs are going to go ahead, and I think Spurs are going comfortably, to be honest.
So if it's at White Hart Lane, I think Spurs will probably win, particularly if United are in the final or indeed have been knocked out, but I think they'll probably make the final. But yeah, so I think United are the most realistic team to catch next, and then as you rightly say Drew, I think City realistically should win those three games. I think Liverpool are the one we've got to look at now, and maybe that James Milner penalty might come back to haunt them. You just never know.
That'd be great if it does.
It would. All we can do is win the games we're offered and hope for the best. That's all we can do. Fellow in the chat room there, or lady, or alien, I don't know, just said, are we going to invite Ross on after the Southampton match on Wednesday? I think we might have to do that. I'll have a little word with Mr. Bramble, see if he's free, see what his schedule is. But yeah, we may well get him back on for that one.
Be nice to Ross, though. Can't be mean to him.
Can't be mean to him. He's too nice to be mean to him. So yeah, we'll see what we can do.
Oh, Ross has a mean streak. Don't get him started, though.
Oh, yeah. he can go full nuts if he needs to.
Only about Coleman.
That's very true.
Yeah. Very true, yeah. Right, we'll finish with a couple of questions then. So I'm going to nominate John to have a look through the chat box. So if you've got a question, put it in there, and John will do his best to type them out to me, and we'll do our best to answer for you. Try and keep them short, because we've got to run about 10 minutes max before John and I have got games we want to go and watch, because we're going full hipster as usual. So let's start with this one then from Alonso Spencer. So Drew, you can have this one. Would you start...
Who would you start?
Sorry, a striker from now on. Yes. So would you go...
It has to be Welbeck, period. I would want to have seen Perez long before that. I think it's too late now to argue that Perez deserves a start, because you want to go with players who are in some sort of match form at the moment. It has to be Welbeck. I think he just offers more than Giroud does. He's just more multifaceted. And I think as you grew into the game today, I thought you saw what he can offer and what Giroud can't. So I think it just has to be Welbeck moving forward. Simple.
Yeah, I agree. Anything different for you, John? Would you be that way inclined?
No, I think Welbeck is the one to play. I do worry a little bit about his finishing. I mean, his header today was brilliant, and sometimes his head's not quite in the game. But I think he's our best option. He gives you the mobility, and at the moment we just need as much movement as we can get. And I love Giroud and everything he's done for the club. I think he's great, but I think he's much better coming off the bench in certain games. And you know, those last 10-15 minutes, if you're struggling a little bit, you can stick him up front and try and get him to hold the ball up, that kind of thing.
Particularly in this system. Yeah. Which is another question that I'll just quickly grab this one from Thomas Reynolds. Why the refusal to play Alexis up top? I've heard, I think quite a few people have heard this, that he doesn't actually want to play up top. I think as John mentioned earlier on, for Chile, he plays more of a free role in behind. And I think he actually prefers coming in from wide areas. He certainly did at Barcelona. So whilst he can be good up top, I don't think he particularly wants to. And Aidan O'Doyle also asked the same. Alexis at striker, Iwobi and Ozil in behind.
Ozil instead.
Yeah.
Ideally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or us.
I, I, or Ox. I think Iwobi's season is done, other than a sub. I think Arsene Wenger wants to protect him because, you know, the kid took a lot of stick, very unfairly, in my opinion. I think he's being taken out the firing line, much like Hector Bellerin. The one interesting one we haven't mentioned is, of course, Theo Walcott, which actually, interesting, just got a question there from lots of random letters. Walcott finished at Arsenal. I think the worst thing that Theo Walcott ever did was say that the players didn't want it enough at Crystal Palace, because we've not seen him anywhere since then, have we? He got the one game at Leicester where he was largely, you know, not really playing particularly well. He was largely played out of the game. But I think a comment like that would have got to Arsene Wenger. He doesn't like players speaking the truth, whether you like that or you don't. He doesn't like players coming out and speaking about, you know, inner sanctum of the dressing room. And I have a feeling that Mr. Walcott might possibly be on his way. It'd be interesting. But what about this one? Which I've just lost, the one that John put here. You can have this one then, John. Sam Dewhurst, a question about next season. Will we win the Europa League with all those trips to Azerbaijan cause us to get relegated from one extreme to the other? We could face the trip to FC Carrierbag or Lidl Rovers next season. John, are you... Let me change the question slightly. Would you put all your eggs in a basket and try and win that competition? It's still Europe at the end of the day. Or are you still in the box of, no, Thursdays are Spurs days, let's get out as soon as we can?
Because we obviously do another podcast where we cover European football, we have to watch both European Cup competitions. And actually, the Champions League group stage is really boring.
Yeah.
And it's just as boring as the Europa League group stage. The difference is there's just more games in the Europa League. Like, it's ridiculous the amount of games you play. When you actually get out of the group stage, you get to knockout round, the Europa League gets really good. And there's been arguably some better games in the Europa League this season than has Champions League. So I think you still go for it. You have to rotate. And it might be a case that if we end up in it, which I still think is more likely than Champions League, that maybe those players that you want to see gone might just get one more year just to bulk the squad out a little bit. Because, yeah, people, you know, I know it's no different if you're playing Wednesday, Saturday to Thursday, Sunday. But if your Thursday trip is to,
Astana, yeah,
which is like Kazakhstan, you know, you finish the game, it finishes at 10 p.m. or whatever. UK time, then you've got to fly back, and the distance travel and everything else, it does have effect on the players. So yeah, I think you have to have a slightly bigger squad. That being said, you should still be able quite comfortable getting through the group stages. So once you get past that, then you generally are left with, you know, teams from Spain, France, Germany, Italy, you know, the more recognised names. You know, Ajax are obviously doing very well and look like they're in the final as well for this season. So no, it's a cup competition, so you should try and win it. I agree, yes, it's not as glamorous as the Champions League and the names aren't exciting, but for the away fans who travel a lot, I think some of them are quite excited at the prospect because it's new places to go they haven't been before. I don't travel away to games, and I barely travel to that many home games, to be honest, but it's got to be really boring going to Munich every year to watch us get absolutely hammered by Bayern. Yeah. It must be pretty miserable. Yeah, right, the flight might be shorter than going all the way to Kazakhstan, but you're going to go somewhere else and experience something different, and I think that's half the fun of travelling away with the team.
You know what'll happen? We'll end up in the Europa League and we'll draw Linfield from Ireland, Celtic from Scotland, and bloody team from France. I mean, that's what'll happen. But yeah, now I see your point. I mean, until we know whether we're in it or not, it's hard to know how we feel about it, isn't it, really? So we've had so many years of mocking that lot down the road who are in it. It's hard to know what to take from it. John, if people want to listen to you and I talk about European football, where can they go?
They can go to, oh, I've got to remember our Twitter handle, @theFHpodcast.
Seamless. Fucking seamless. Brilliant.
Jesus,
you're sacked. That's you out the door. Yes, you can find us there. In fact, our chums, Ross and Josh, are recording a look back at the final day of the championship from yesterday, or from today, sorry, as we speak. So do check that out. Oscar Arias wants to know, where will Mbappe land this summer? I shall take that one. Anywhere... Yeah, not us, sadly. Anywhere that will pay a lot of money to him and his agent, which is not Jorge Mendes, contrary to popular belief. No, I think I do genuinely believe that we are one of the options he would consider. My concern is that we will be outbid, and ultimately, even if the player quite fancies playing for us, which I'm led to believe may be the case, I'm not sure that his agent or the people that look after him, or indeed his boot manufacturers, will be too keen on missing out on the dollars of him signing for a larger club or a club with a higher status than us at the moment. So I have a horrible feeling that a certain Frenchman at Real Madrid might end up coming to Arsenal, and he might end up going there. Yes, if you are if you're currently of a Venezuelan persuasion and have very large boobies, you might be getting on the Benzema train as we speak. John knows what I mean. Yes, I have a funny feeling that that might be something we'll revisit. Here's one, John. You can have this one because I know you're a big fan. Tinchy Striker, that's a great name. Wojciech Szczęsny, Peter Cech, or David Ospina, or a new goalkeeper in the summer.
Bring back the Szczęs. I'm all about bringing back Szczęsny. He's had a great 2 years. He's had a great 2 years in Rome. He's been one of the best goalkeepers this season in Serie A. I think he's got more clean sheets than any other goalkeeper. And Roma's defence isn't the best in the league, that's for sure. They do have good defenders. They just don't defend particularly well. So, yeah, I bring him back. If it means giving him first place, then straight away. I'd keep Cech and have him for cup competitions or whatever, and I'd also try and convince him and say, look, you play for another year or two, we'll rotate you a little bit and do your badges here and stay at Arsenal and teach Martinez and the younger kids. And I think, I like Ospina, he's done well, but just a goalkeeper with no neck that's short, I can't. He's a nice guy. He's a very nice guy, Dave the Binman, but he's got no neck. Only 6 foot. He's not meant to be a goalkeeper.
You might get to see him more next season, John, because I'm led to believe that Everton are very keen. So he might be sticking around. But I think you're right. I think.
But if Szczęsny doesn't come back, I do think we need to go and buy a goalkeeper. Yes.
Haroon makes a good point. Jordan Pickford is an option. I think he's been doing very well in a very poor Sunderland.
Yeah, you can go and strip that Sunderland team because, believe it or not, there are actually good players at Sunderland. They're just got a terrible manager and sort of culture up there.
And I, for one, can't wait for the announcement of Lee Catamol in our midfield. That will excite me beyond all means. I agree. I think I'm with you. I don't. It's just a very sort of menacing side of me that wants to give Wodge just one more go, just one more go, particularly if we let Jack go, because then he's got less influences in London and maybe, so if we could sign Lolly John.
Goalkeepers are supposed to be nuts. The best goalkeepers are completely insane.
And the other thing as well is when Wodge was there, obviously we all know about the Morris dancer coaching him, and also Wodge was there when we had Almunia and some fairly average goalkeepers. Imagine if you've got Petr Cech keeping him on the street straight and narrow, that could turn his career around, couldn't it? So, get Lolich on in as a coach, get rid of Jerry Payton and give Wodge another go, maybe.
The whole smoking in the dressing, I know people say, oh, it's disrespect for everything else. I couldn't give a monkey. Smoke all you want. He's a great goalkeeper. Get him in.
No one cared
about the Choosy Club and everyone going out hammered. I know it's a different era of football and everything else. Just go on with it. You know who smokes? You know who smokes and is one of the best midfielders in Europe? Rajan Englund smokes all the time. One of the best midfielders in Europe. No one says a thing.
Like a
doesn't get picked for the Belgian national team. Roberto Martinez is an idiot. Just let it go, Roberto.
I don't think anyone can avoid that or agreeing with you on that one. Drew, I'm going to give you two questions because you're lucky. First one, Gunas in the USA. Hello, Mike and Andy. Is Rob Holding nailed on for a starter in August? I'll leave that one. Yeah, so answer that one first for me.
Yep. Next.
Okay. Next. Where will Jack Wilshere be next season? Gunas Shy 77. Interesting.
That's the one you're asking me?
Yeah.
Ask one more later on about Alexander De Rosen. Then
I'll tell you what, John can have the Jack question. You can have the one.
I hate talking about
him. What was it? What was the other question? Sorry, I've lost it.
Asking Alexander De Rosen or Mark Overmars or director of football.
Okay, there you go. You've done it yourself.
Cool. Rosen is the better option, but Hoffenheim aren't going to let him go because the whole idea there is that they're going to want Nagelsmann there for a while. Him and Rosen have a very good understanding, working relationship about scouting, the kind of players that Hoffenheim are going to want to build, how to take the club forward. It's not if you look at the type of players that they brought in, you should read up on how Hoffenheim actually scout players. It's not just about who had a brilliant season, how much money do they cost. They're a club that targets specific qualities in players in certain areas, and they move forward with that, and they understand everything about brackets, what they can, the financial brackets, the types of players that get the most effect for the position. It's not based off of on the name basis in an Arsenal. The club and the fans feel like they need players of a higher quality. I don't think he suits the club. As good of a director of football that he is, he suits a project like Hoffenheim. He doesn't suit a club like Arsenal. In regards to Mark Overmars, he's very hit and miss. He has done brilliantly with bringing some of the players in Ajax. He's also had a lot of failures in his earlier days. I get that he understands the club, obviously. He knows Arsene Wenger. He could have some insight into the Dutch market. There are a lot of very good players there who are very attainable for the kind of money that Wenger wants to spend. For example, David Klaassen is a player that I've followed quite a bit. He would suit the club, just as an example. And obviously, he's at Ajax. So it would depend on the kind of working relationship he would have with Wenger. If Wenger's going to be very, this is what I want, and you have no say, just go out and get them, then I think Overmars would work. But I think if you give Overmars a little too much free thinking ability, sometimes he will get it very, very, very wrong. I know Ajax fans will agree with me on that. So,
One thing's for sure, I think we all agree, pretty much every Arsenal fan across the planet agrees that if we are to get a new director of football, or indeed a director of football full stop, they have to be allowed to do their job. So be interesting. 100%. Yeah, agreed. Okay, final question then, John, you can have, we'll combine the two then. So Gunashai's 77's question about Jack Wilshere, and also Zohaib. Hopefully I got that right, seven, will we be keeping Joel Campbell? I suspect I know the answer to that one, but Campbell and Wilshere, what do you think for next season?
I think Campbell will go. I don't think Arsene was ever really that interested in him, and he ended up in the team just because so many players were out of form. I do think he's a decent player, but I think we should be aiming for better. Jack is really difficult. I think if Arsene signs a new deal and his manager, which I suspect is going to be the case, then Jack probably gets a new contract, or a, you know, extension or whatever. Maybe it's not the right thing to do. I know he got another leg break, didn't he? But depending on how it heals, it might be okay. He hasn't lit the world on fire at Bournemouth. I really, really like Jack, and I do think there's a couple of times this season where our midfield could have done with a player like him. But I don't think he's going to be fit enough all the time. So if it was me, I'd reluctantly let him go and see how much money you could get for him, but I suspect Arsenal want to keep him and see if he can get something out of him.
Great. We'll, I think Joel Campbell, by the way, is interesting. Two clubs in France, and also interestingly drew Schalke apparently keen to have a look at him, so I'm not quite sure where that one
there is a reason.
Yeah, true. And also quickly just to address Sam Dewhurst in the chat, who said about Yuri Tielemans, almost certainly a done deal to Monaco. So Bernardo Silva is on the way out of Monaco.
Breaks my heart.
Yeah, and it will break my heart when Bernardo Silva ends up in Mourinho's camp, trust me. But still, it's another story. Okay, I think we will leave it there. John, just very quickly, how do you respond to Dom's allegations of your poor beard performance today?
Justified. I'm not going to hide. I'm not Mourinho. I will not blame Luke Shaw for everything that is going wrong. I've only got myself to blame, and I'm sorry that I've let Dom down yet again.
It's not just Dom you've let down, John. You've let us all down, to be honest.
Most importantly, I've let myself down, which is the real issue. So,
and that's unforgivable. You know,
the people who are listening to this and not watching live at least don't have to suffer my poor excuse for a beard. So
that's very true. Yeah, many, many young children.
Or your red hair.
Well, it's more pink now, but yeah, many, many young children's lives were put at risk for John's beard appearing live on TV today. So think about that when you're listening back to this, people. Anyway, right, we will draw a line there. Thank you very much to everyone in the chat. If you do like what we do, I know some of you love us, some of you hate us. No, all feedback is welcome. We love you all, genuinely, even people that, fall out with me. It's all good. So if you like what we do, please feel free to leave us a thumbs up or a thumbs down in the thingy. You know how to do that. Leave us a comment if you like. For those who've been joining us in the chat today, thank you all very much. Sophie, I will message you at some point in the coming days and get you on here. We're also going to have Kyle back for the end of the season. I think Akib's going to come back for the end of the season as well. Obviously, we've got Southampton midweek, so we'll be back for that. Don't know who's on yet, so please don't ask, because I don't know my house from my elbow at the moment. Also, there's a blog out, which I think, Drew, you wrote, didn't you, from what I can remember. Tell us what it's called and what it's about.
I was basically highlighting the fact that if we're going to stay with three at the back, that we have to give ourselves a tactical chance of making it work by starting the right players and having the right approach, which we saw today seemed to improve, which was good because changes were made. So there you go.
Splendid. So if you get along to at the Bergie Blogs, I think the Twitter handle is, where our wonderful taco smelling Canadian lovely man, Mr. OG, does a wonderful job. So have a read of Drew's work and feedback accordingly. And as usual, you can follow any of the crew: Danny, Gimli, Simon, Steve, Dom, who else is with us? Jace, Raj, Jeff, we're all there. You can find us all. Dig us out on Twitter if you want to give us a follow and abuse us accordingly. So thank you very much for everyone for tuning in. At least it's better than last week. We can smile again for another week. Well, at least we can smile until we go to Southampton, where God knows what will happen. But whatever happens, we'll be back for that game. My thanks to Danny and Gimli for giving us the platform as usual. Keep it tuned to AVW Radio. Keep it Arsenal. Leave us a thumbs up, and we'll speak to you very soon. Ta-ta for now. They can come true.
Dreams can come true. Look at me, babe, I'm in the really strong.